This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. It is now time, of course, for Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj.
Arvind Varaj.
We're going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. And, of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio.
Yes.
Yeah, because yesterday I just said we were at BFM, and I was, you know, cursed at. And then if you want to get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Stories we have lined up for you today. It is a fun Friday. Some of these stories, not so much fun, though. We have a tale of two losses. Well, rather, we have a story of profit and then loss. And then we'll be talking about how Bill Gates aims to clean up the planet. So we've got one man who's launching cars into space. Another one is trying to clean up the planet. You know, there's a start of some kind of interstellar war happening here, I think.
It's for the rest of us who can't afford to live in space
Us mere mortals. And then we'll be looking at the first music-based lifestyle hub in Asia, and then wrapping up, of course, with some podcasts that we think you might want to have a listen to over the weekend. So let's start off for the first time ever, Twitter have finally turned a profit. Yay! Only took 12 years. The social network reported its fourth quarter earnings today, and as expected, the company posted a modest profit, pulling in $91 million on $732 million in revenue. That's a jump of 2% on the revenue it posted in the same period last year. They've attributed the small rise to increased advertising revenue stemming from the updates it made to the product over the last year, as well as video ad sales. Annual revenue for the company was slightly down in 2017. However, it generated $2.4 billion versus $2.5 billion in 2016. We know it's not been an easy ride for Twitter as a public company. They've had middling revenues. It faces the giant that is Facebook, of course, which has dwarfed its advertising revenue and user base as long as Twitter has been public. So it's interesting. So, I mean, I was trying to figure out, you know, how they turned a profit, you know, and what had actually happened.
And the first thing you think about is ads, right?
Right. So that was exactly what we did, right? So we looked at, you know, what's been going on, and they were talking about video advertising sales was the big thing. They were the shares shot up 12%, by the way, yesterday because of this announcement. But they did also say that because of Apple and the Safari web browser, they were having a bit of a hard time. We know also that a lot of the Twitter user base was culled because there are a whole bunch of fake bots on there. So I thought, you know, I got thinking, like, I looked at what they've been doing, and it looks like they've done three things. They've reduced their costs, basically. It's not just that they've made more money from advertising. They've reduced costs. So the stock-based compensation, what they give out to their staff and whatnot in quarter four, was $102 million US dollars, which is down from $138 million of last year. They've reduced the cost of R&D. So last year it was $134 million. And this year, it's $134 million down from $202 million. And the sales and marketing, they've reduced the cost of that by $70 million. So it's not necessarily that they've suddenly gone, oh, you know, we are so great now, we have much more advertising space and blah, blah, blah. It's that they've just been a bit more efficient, which is what you're supposed to have done, I don't know, 10 years ago, perhaps.
At the beginning. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what their profits are like in the next year, right? Because Twitter can celebrate for now, but, you know, they need to make a dent in the digital ad space, and that's dominated by Google and Facebook.
Right.
I think combined, Google and Facebook have about 26% of the worldwide digital ad market. Twitter only has 1.2%.
Wow.
So this is what they really need to work on in order to make a better profit, you know. I mean, they can cut the fat, you know. They can be as lean as they like, but in order to see those profits grow quarter after quarter after quarter, this is what they'll need to work on.
I mean, according to some of the Twitter staff, you know, I don't think they can get much leaner at this point. You know, so that's a little bit of a tip.
Do we know why Twitter is not as popular as Facebook and Google? I mean, there are more important people on Twitter. If you look, like,
don't say it.
Country leaders, celebrities, people, you know, who actually do things are on Twitter.
Right. But not thought so much leaders, might we say.
Yeah, thought leaders are on Twitter. Not so much on Facebook, because Facebook is normally like brand pages and someone else manages their Facebook site. But it looks like a lot of people prefer being on Facebook and Google and not so much Twitter. That's why they killed Vine a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
So they're supposed to use that as a way to get advertisers and have a more a video platform, but it didn't work out for them.
I mean, I think, you know, if we were to speculate, a lot of people who I know, you know, who are kind of a little bit older, they're like, well, you know, when I have Facebook, why do I need Twitter? Why do I need, you know, Snapchat? Why do I need any of these other kind of services when I already have this that does pretty much everything that I need, you know?
I've started to use Twitter more recently because it's I get like these micro bite-sized information from people that I follow, and I've stopped using Facebook so much. I don't know if that's a trend with a lot of people are slowly like jumping to Twitter and Instagram. That's why they're making more money, but we'll have to see like next quarter.
Possibly. Mm. Right, let's move on to the next story then. Tesla have reported a record loss, but says outlook is positive.
This is the best way to announce a bad profit report, you know, just because, they've put a positive spin on it. I love it. So electric car maker Tesla notched up its biggest ever quarterly loss, but said it learned many lessons from its crucial Model 3 production plans, and things are looking positive.
I bet they did.
Yeah. So the firm's future hangs on the Model 3 sedan, but it has so far struggled with production bottlenecks. Model 3 is its most popular model just because it's priced at like $35,000 USD, and it's a medium-sized car, which Tesla describes as its most affordable and hopes it will have a mass market appeal. It's significantly cheaper than the other models that Tesla has, the Model X, which is an SUV, and then the Model S is a sporty saloon. They're both priced at about $70,000, so double the price of the Model 3. So Tesla reported a loss of $675 million in the 3 months to December, compared with $121 million a year earlier. It said revenues rose to almost $3.3 billion, up from $2.28 billion, and that it was addressing all its Model 3 production issues. And they said at some point in 2018, they expect to begin generating positive quarterly operating income on a sustained basis. Of course, they've yet to make a profit, lah.
I mean, it's interesting that it costs more money to make a cheaper car, first and foremost. But Elon Musk did tweet at some point yesterday, you know, if we can launch a car into space, then surely we can solve our Model 3 production problems.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest problem they have? The battery.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
So I think he's working on that more because he wants to make a slimmer battery. He says that once he makes a slimmer model for the cars, then it'll bring down production price a lot. So I think that's what they're working on. It's not so much the car. The car is made of the same thing that every high-end car, not so much high-end car, prosumer car is made of, but it's the battery inside that's the biggest problem, that they cannot figure out how to make a lightweight battery for half the price that they are supposed to make it for.
Interesting. Mm. Okay, when we come back, we have a story about how Bill Gates is aiming to clean up the planet. We've had a bit of Bill Gates on the show this week, haven't we? Hmm. This week or last week? Anyway, some music coming up. It is the Traveling Wilburys with End of the Line. But if you do want to get in touch with the show, get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Of course, on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Let us know your thoughts. Some music, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Arvind Yuvraj
and Audrey Raj.
So we just had a quick chat about Elon Musk and how Tesla are on a loss at the minute. Bill Gates has announced that he intends to clean up the planet. How nice of him. It's a simple idea. He's going to strip CO2 from the air and use it to produce carbon neutral fuel.
Simple.
Right? Simple, right? Mm. So the idea is fairly grandiose, yet fairly simple, apparently, according to scientists. He's going to decarbonize the global economy by extracting global warming carbon dioxide straight from the air using arrays of giant fans and patented chemical wizardry, and then use the gas to make clean, carbon-neutral synthetic diesel and petrol to drive the world's ships, planes, and trucks. So the hope is that the combination of direct air capture, water electrolysis, and fuels synthesis used to produce liquid hydrocarbon fuels can be made to work at a global scale for little more than it costs to extract and sell fossil fuel today. Are you listening, Mr. Trump? This would revolutionize the world's transport industry, which emits nearly one-third of total climate-changing emissions. It basically would be the equivalent of mechanizing photosynthesis. Mm. So they're using this process that they call air-to-fuels, or A2F, potentially game-changing technology, which, if successfully scaled up, will allow people to harness cheap, intermittent, renewable energy to drive synthesis of liquid fuels that are compatible with modern infrastructures and engines. So basically, the whole problem is with stuff like biofuels and a lot of the renewable stuff that we're looking into, you know, future-proofing or whatever. The stuff that we already have built, the infrastructures that we already have built, we would have to mothball and, you know, take down, and that would cost an awful lot of money. Then you have to rebuild with something new for the newer tech.
Yeah.
But what these guys are saying is that if this actually takes off, then we won't need to do any of that, and we can use the stuff that they develop instead.
Yeah, so carbon neutral fuels, just for those who are not aware, it is how the world will transition into clean economies,
yeah.
I mean, via clean fuels. Now, air to fuels allows us to produce global scale quantities of drop-in ready fuels like gasoline, diesel, and Jet A without the use of crude oil. So these fuels are cleaner burning than fossil fuels, can be carbon neutral on a life cycle basis, and can be produced with 100 times less land use than biofuels, and are already directly compatible with existing infrastructure.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
So they were talking about that the world has to be at carbon zero in emissions by 2090. And the current, as we are looking right now, we are currently nowhere near that and are going to fail massively unless we do something fairly drastic. This is kind of worrying for a Friday, fun Friday, right?
Oh, yeah.
And also, if you look at the image of this machine, it's basically a machine tree.
Right, a machine tree.
If you think about it.
I tell you what it looks like. You know the fans that you have for the aircon units?
Yeah.
It looks like they've scaled them up to the size of a house almost and then put about 100 of them next to one another, and they just kind of sat in the middle of nowhere, you know, pulling carbon dioxide. They're not the prettiest of things, are they?
They've got like large fans as well, so.
But you know,
so I mean, what's the coverage? Like, how will they do it for like cities and stuff? You need like a farm outside the city to build
it. Right.
Yeah.
So right now they're farms outside of cities, and I think they've got one in the US, and they're looking at developing another one somewhere else. But like Audrey said earlier on, you know, for places like heavily dense urban areas, you could just put them on the roof. You know, you can have a two or three of these fans on whatever particular skyscraper, and as well as your kind of solar panels, you could perhaps have one of these little fans up. They don't look like the, you know, the fans that are used for generating electricity. They look like an aircon unit, you know. So, and then I said to Oz, well, why can't they just use the aircon unit as well?
Maybe
they could do both.
Wasn't aircon supposed to warm in the first place? That was the story, that it was supposed to warm the inside of the house, but then it didn't work as well, so they turned it into like an air conditioner.
That's right.
But didn't we have like a startup? We have a startup locally where someone, I can't remember who, he uses the heat in car parks to fuel, to create energy. But I can't get the name of the person.
Yes,
but
we had him at a breakaway.
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Two years ago. 2 years ago, yes.
Okay, well, look up that name and we can talk to people about it when we get back.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a short break. We've got some music from Badfinger with No Matter What, followed by Journey, any way you want it. BFM 89.9.
Build financial mountains. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBite. We're on our final story before we give you some podcast suggestions. But if you do want to get in touch about any of the stories that we've done so far, please feel free. We're on Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Final story then. First music-based lifestyle hub in Asia. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, they're calling it Asia Music City, or AMC for short. And it's a lifestyle hub that will be in Quill City Mall in KL. And since there's only one hub in each country, so Quill City will be the exclusive mall for this new venture that they're doing. It's being called Asia's first integrated lifestyle hub dedicated to music, sound, lighting and video lovers. And AMC is set to be the one-stop center that sort of combines retail and entertainment under one roof. So it's basically like a shopping haven for all music-related products and services. All music stuff. So and Quill City was chosen because it could include some key features that AMC wants at this venue. It'll be the largest mall in Malaysia dedicated to music, retail, showroom, workshop, event space, entertainment products, all that under one roof. I think they've taken up like a few floors to stack with all these things. And they also, AMC is also planning to open more hubs in places like Bangkok soon. So it's a country by country, one hub in every country in Southeast Asia first, and then probably move into the wider world. It'll have a huge collection of stuff like guitars, pianos, drums, all kinds of DJ equipment, and they also are promoting vintage musical instruments as well. So now 80% of AMC is complete, and it'll be located on 5 different levels. Phase 1, which includes a convention center, studio hub, radio station, and ticketing station, is scheduled to be completed in April. And then phase 2, which is the retail part of this whole thing, should be done by August. There'll also be a concert center that they're promoting and an event venue. Stuff like a loading bay, Megastar lounge, a VVIP section for for celebrities, and also a solo stage. This part I like because it has a solo stage open to the public and for local performers.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Once it's complete, the first event will be the SLV Symposium 2018. They also have the Japan Music Festival is moving there. The Anime Festival Asia is moving there. Sundown Music Festival is moving there. And they also have four events by Star Planet and a couple of events by MM2 coming up. KRU Studios will be moving there as well. I think now they are in Cyberjaya, if not mistaken. And then they're having a partner by they're partnering with Ticket Charge for a couple of things. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on. But the best part that I like is that they say they have people who want to jam or record an album. AMC has a studio hub with a recording studio and six rehearsal studios as well. So it's they want to make it, I think, like an all-in-one music center where you can go and listen to performances and see like live bands play and all that stuff. But you can also go and get all your musical instruments because we don't have something like that here yet.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I was just looking at where it is. It's Jalan Sultan Ismail.
Yeah. Not
the Kampung Baru.
Yeah. Not the
most ideal of locations.
Not the
right?
most ideal of locations. But they say there are a lot of, they are going to fix the parking situation. So, there are going to be a lot of parking bays that they're going to open up.
You're going to need more parking if you expect to have concerts.
You're going to have somebody like Jackie Chung turning up to, you know, perform.
That's exactly what they said. They said that the people that turned up for his ticket launch or something was a huge number. So, they expect more people to show up for their events. They say that they're going to bring people from Taiwan and Hong Kong as well, celebrities. Like just for signings and maybe one-off performances and stuff.
The only thing that worries me about one mall that sells all of this kind of stuff is that you're going to get so many stores selling the same kind of things that, you know, at the end of the day, one business, somebody's going to go out of business, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to be the problem. So how do you promote healthy competition in that space if you have, how many floors? Was it six or seven?
Five floors. Five full floors.
Of all people selling very, very similar products. And I don't know. I mean,
I don't know how much they can make from their product sales, like their retail. I don't know how many people go shopping for musical instruments on a regular basis. Yeah, on a regular basis. But if they sell their event space, I think they can make quite a lot of money. I used to go to Merdekaria a lot because they had like, you know, just smaller bands performing and all. It's really nice.
Yeah.
And then Scout, they have the local platform, so they highlight local artists. And sometimes you listen to their music and it's so good, but they don't get any traction because they have no avenue, they have no stage. They're just performing at a couple of, you know, smaller places.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like Jaya One and stuff, they have like small events, but it's not enough to get them noticed by anyone bigger. So something like this would be good for them.
I agree.
I guess they have to keep the price of the stages down because if you charge premium prices for people to come and rent their space, then local people can't do it as well. It's not supposed to be something just for people from Taiwan and Hong Kong and celebrities because they can afford anything, right? It's supposed to be for the local music scene.
But like you say, they have one small stage for local artists, right?
Yeah, they have a couple of stages for local artists and for performers and stuff, but they haven't said anything about pricing yet. So that will be the make or break because if you charge people too much, it's the same as when people can't afford to go sometimes to Publica to sell their homemade goods because Publica charges quite a lot for these people. They don't make enough returns in the day. Mm-hmm. So if they charge people a lot, like a premium fee, then they're not going to be able to go play their cover band songs there. Yeah.
Well, let's just hope it becomes an affordable makerspace for musicians out there, you know. And, you know, I mean, being able to record your own album and, you know, have like a production studio on hand. I mean, this is ideal for those who really want to
get
take that first step, right?
Yeah.
Right, we're going to take a short break with some music, of course. We've got Queens of the Stone Age coming up next, followed by a little bit of the Foo Fighters here on BFM 89.9. And when we come back, we'll give you some podcast recommendations that you might want to have a listen to over the weekend. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to BFM BizBytes, Enterprise BizBytes, rather, on BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
It is the business station. This is also Enterprise BizBytes. It's pretty much time for us to wrap up. But as per usual on a Friday, we'll give you some podcasts that you should be checking out over the weekend, or at least we think so. What we're going to go with first, Audrey.
Yeah. So Christine did an interview with Zandra Ooi on Raise Your Game on Monday that aired at 1:30 p.m. This podcast is titled Create an Upward Spiral. So Christine spoke to Zandra about why happiness is a skill and how we can prevent negativity from impacting our performance in the workplace. So it's a nice, friendly listen to psych yourself up for the Monday of the Chinese New Year week. Now, I'm not sure if you follow Zandria's 30-day happiness program, but it's actually quite... I know what you think, you know. It's like a
one-minute... I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a one-minute video or so, and it covers like the things that you need to think about to actually consciously bring happiness into your life. It's a 30-day program. You just watch the videos, and I've watched a couple of them, and some of them really hit home. So it's something that you might want to check out. It's on Facebook. But, you know, listen to the podcast first. It's called Create an Upward Spiral with Zandria Oi. Yeah. Christine did that one.
Listen to
Good
it
job.
Now and then use it on the Monday after Chinese New Year, because when you're coming back from your break, because next week's a good week. It's like a four-day week, and then you've got Friday, you've got the long weekend. But when you have to come back after that, when you've had your food coma, when you've put on like a couple of extra kgs, then
and
you listen
to
this
traffic, you know,
the traffic.
The traffic.
Yeah, oh, let's not talk about the traffic.
Yeah.
All right, next one. One of yours.
Five of Fortune. So the episode...
You're so modest, you know.
Oh,
so
modest, yeah. I don't know who did this.
Right.
So it was this morning, I spoke about startup stories that aren't true. So we always hear like the romantic version of startup stories, like how eBay was made by a guy who wanted to give a platform for his girlfriend because she wanted to trade like pest dispensers. Not true. So there's also the Facebook story because of the social network movie, also not true. Google, there's YouTube, there's Tinder. So all these people come up with these stories to sort of tell people like how they came up with this eureka moment and stuff. But the actual story behind it is very, very different. So I covered five of these on today's Five for Fortune. They're not liars, but it's the way that these stories got spun by media.
Romanticized.
And romanticized and how it's just beautified.
Artistic license. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Some of it is completely untrue, like works of fiction, but some of it is sort of an adaptation of what actually happened. So that was today's episode.
Lovely. So that's what you should be checking out this weekend. But don't go anywhere, of course. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. He's been described by some as the bad boy of European politics. His name is Yanis Varoufakis. He was the Greek finance minister in 2015 at the height of its debt crisis. On the sidelines of the World Capital Markets Symposium 2018, the Morning Run team spoke with Yanis on his account of the event, chronicled in his book Adults in the Room, as well as his thoughts on the future of the EU and global capitalism. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, some music from Chuck Berry, Sweet Little 16, followed by the Easy Beats with She's So Fine. That's all coming up right now here on BFM 89.9, the business station. Have a nice weekend, folks.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.